Hey there, welcome to the Clyde Podcast. This is Willow Weston, the founder and director of Clyde and the host of this show, and I'm so glad that you hopped on today. Today in our office, you might hear some squealing and some laughter in the background. We have a team of women here today who are working hard, being creative and ideating for our conference, and I can hear them. They're blowing up some sort of balls or something because we're planning a big party. Because there are so many things that God is doing and will do that deserve celebration. So that's what you're hearing in the background. I'm so glad to spend this time with you. And I'm about to hand you an interview that I just had with Tara Mattson. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist, an author, and a speaker. She has over 20 years of experience helping women and girls. And she is the author of the book called Courageous, Being Daughters Rooted in Grace. So if you're a mama and you have a daughter, check out this podcast. I hope that it meets you right where you're at. Tara, it's so good to have you on the podcast today.
It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me, Willow.
Yeah, despite all our technical difficulties we had before we came on here, I was laughing and so are you. I mean, two people who are not techies. And I'm glad we're making this work.
Yeah. We innovated, though. We came up with another route. We're just like, well, that
didn't work. We really did. Good job. You're a licensed marriage and family therapist. You're an author. You're a speaker. You're a wife, a mom. I mean, so many things. But I would love to start this conversation out by talking about what inspired you to become a therapist.
I don't know if inspiration is the right word. To be honest, I went kicking and screaming. When I was younger, I wanted to be a doctor only because I was fascinated by the human body. And then my senior year of high school, my youth pastor really spoke to me and said, "Hey, I think you need to go into ministry." And I had no paradigm for that with part of my journey, my spiritual journey. So I ended up going to a Christian university and I studied the Bible, theology, and education, like it was called educational ministries, how to teach the Bible to children, adults, and be in the church. Felt like I was called to ministry. Met my husband, who was in youth pastor ministry. And then, honestly, I did psychology. I did a backup degree in psychology because I was just like, you know what? If this ministry thing doesn't work, then maybe I should do something over here. And my whole life, people told me I should be a counselor, but I didn't really know what that meant. Fast forward, out of obedience, I really did go to school. I thought, you know what? I worked in the church and I just saw that we were missing a piece of our humanity and understanding how God meets us. He's the one who designed us as humans. I was fascinated by relationships and I had some incredible mentors. I actually was mentored by Les and Leslie Parrott, who are relationship gurus and have written 40 plus books in marriage. So I went to grad school and every semester I wanted to quit because I really have a heart for the church. And I just thought, I don't want to do this traditional counseling thing. But then as I started meeting with couples and women and children and teens, I started to see discipleship in a deeper way and that I could slow down and go into the roots and into the deeper spaces with people. And I saw that God was actually smarter than me, right? And had some things that he wanted to show me about himself, about his people, about relationship, and my own journey. So I did the back route. A lot of counselors go into the field because of their story. I actually went to counseling because I became a counselor. And I was like, I should probably do my own work here.
Yeah, interesting.
So I kind of did the backwards route. And now that's what we do. We help leaders in the church really do their work and their story work so that we can come alongside and really disciple those in our wake of influence, whether in the home or at work or in church, in healthier and more whole ways.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because I know that I found too in doing ministry for the last couple of decades and here at Collide meeting with all of these women where you have people who are pursuing God, pursuing Jesus, and yet they feel broken. Their pain is kind of coming out sideways. And what's been mind-blowing in the years of doing ministry for me is to see that many of the people I run into have never been invited to deal with their childhood trauma, their family of origin issues, their baggage, the way they've been sexually assaulted. They've just kind of, it's almost like their church experience has been, let's just sweep all that under the rug. You give your life to Jesus, you say a couple of prayers, you should be good with God, move on. And it sounds like you're trying to come alongside people who are leading people in the church and help them to find healing in their story so they can help other people. So what are you noticing about our tendency as humans to kind of, I don't know, avoid the ways we need healing and just figure it'll go away and we'll get better?
Yeah. Well, I think it comes from two sides, right? So our humanity, this is cross in the church, out of the church. We don't like pain, period. We see that throughout scripture. None of us like suffering or want to suffer. And so we build up all of these ways to control and prevent and think, well, that's not going to happen to me. And when it does happen to me, we lose our trust meters break. And so we start trusting people we shouldn't trust, and we don't trust those that are trustworthy. And so the humanity side of it is that everybody suffers and everyone goes through pain. And so for some reason, some of us think we're exempt from that and we minimize. And there's actually research that's directly connected to the higher levels of trauma we've experienced, the more we dissociate or dismiss that, because it's a coping strategy to say, oh, people have it worse. And so we minimize our stories until we are in a safe place to be able to be heard and to have someone grieve with us. And then in the church, we somehow, it's a message that's true biblically, but it gets misinterpreted. And the message is this: all you need is Jesus. And I think it's absolutely 100% true is that we can't find healing without Jesus. But Jesus, or God, created the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, created us as relational beings. So we actually need to move through our healing with God and with others as part of our full redemption. So we want community, but we don't want to have people see what's, you know, really in our stories, partly because we don't want to go there and partly because we're afraid of how people will respond. And so we're passionate about helping people to be okay with their humanity, that God isn't, when we come to Jesus, he doesn't rescue us from all of the pieces of our humanity. And honestly, part of the greatest maturity comes when we're able to let him into all of our story, and to do that in healthy ways. I think the church can do it in unhealthy ways, and the world does it in unhealthy ways. And so we kind of need to come together and find a balance of how do we do this well, and how do we change the messaging in the church that makes it safe for women to be able to face their stories and to not do it alone with Jesus by themselves, you know, on a mountain. Or through just a moment of prayer of healing. And I'm going, he can heal that quickly, but I don't see him choosing to do that very often. I think he wants us to invite into a process, or be invited into a process.
Absolutely. And there's power in naming the pain, naming what you've experienced, so that you actually are mindful about how you're being triggered now to sort of travel backwards, or how a name you are called might be lying to you and you're living out of that lie. I mean, there's so many helpful things that can happen as a part of the process of actually going through a place where we don't minimize our story, but we have a safe space where we can be real about our story, process how it's made us who we are and who God's calling us to be. So I love the work that you're doing. I also think when you talk about doing it in community and not just with Jesus, God uses people. I think of we talk about colliding with Jesus all the time. He uses people, that collision. I think it's in Mark where there were four men carrying a man who was on a mat, and they carry him to Jesus, right? And they couldn't get in the house because it was a packed house, and they climb up and unroof the roof and they lower him down. He wouldn't have gotten to Jesus and experienced the help and healing without other people carrying him there. And so much of our healing experience does have to do with allowing other people into our stories, right?
Absolutely. It's fun. As you're describing that part of scripture, I always think about Narnia and the little mouse. They kind of have that in the picture of the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe. And so I'm picturing, you know, the courage it takes to be carried, and then also to choose to come alongside a friend in that way. It's hard. It's much easier to stay in the surface parts of life and to pretend all is fine, but it gets harder in the long run. So it's worth it to do the harder work up front.
Yeah.
When we don't need people to help us. Mm-hmm.
When we don't deal with our pain and the areas that need healing in our life, how would you describe kind of like how that multiplies the ways we don't deal with things, how deal with things, it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. How would you describe what happens there?
Yeah. Okay. So it think about it just like if we shook up a bottle of soda pop, right? And you're shaking it, shaking it, shaking it. And at some point, you take the lid off, what's going to happen? It's going to explode. And what happens for a lot of us is we have tolerance for our stories in our 20s. Then maybe we get married. And so now you're starting to get poked at some of the most vulnerable places. And then maybe throw in some children. And then they get to an age that reminds you, maybe not overtly, you don't realize it, but something about when they're 16, they're starting to, it feels too close to home, and everything that happened in your story is right in front of you. And so we end up either trying to control it or to shove it down or to shame. And so when we do our work, no matter where we're at in our story, I mean, I work with 65, 70-year-olds who are just starting their work. And I'm like, that's courageous. So wherever you're starting your work, to be able to know your story and to understand those pain points lowers the pressure from that bottle, you know, explosion. Mm-hmm. We're slower to anger. We're quicker to listen. We have more grace and compassion. I think those of us that are really impatient with everyone else and everyone else's issues, it's because we don't have a lot of grace for ourselves, and we're carrying a lot of shame and disappointment, or just hurt from all the people that have done something to us or we've done towards them. And so this is just a place to really slow down. And Psalm 139 says, search me and show me what anxious or wicked way in me, depending on the translation you read, and lead me in the way everlasting. So he's got to show us sometimes what we're running from. And, you know, generations impact generations. So as counselors, I went into marriage and family therapy because I was fascinated by the relationships and how relationships impact us. And no matter if somebody says, I'm not going to be like my parents, that's really funny, because you'll find yourself either overtly pendulum swinging over here to not be like them, or it just leaks out because we pick up what our family of origin passed on to us. It was how God designed it. Discipleship is walking and talking with each other. And so who do we hang out with the most? It's our families that we grow up in, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so my girls are going to have to process their story with Jeff and I. And I always tell them, I hope you'll be honest with me if I need to make repair. And I'm constantly asking the Lord, where do I need to own things here in their teen years? But it comes from a willingness to know that my identity is not wrapped up in my story. My identity is as a child of God. But it's taken me years to get there as I've shed layer on layer of my story. And, you know, my personal journey is becoming an overperformer. So I don't want to face what I felt or what I experienced. But so I become this amazing person who can do all the things. And the perception was that I'm strong, I don't have issues, I choose the right things. But that's a scary thing, because honestly, I'm going to pass, if that's the message that I pass on to my girls, guess what? They don't know how to deal with their own humanity. I've equipped them to walk with Jesus and to walk in the church, but they're still like, oh, mom always does the right thing. Mom never melts down in the middle, you know, of the living room. Mom always has the house perfect and together. mom can do all these things. I'm doing a huge disservice to them and anyone else. So doing our story work helps us just be more in touch with our humanity and show the real person of who we are. And it actually shows off who God is even more. And it makes it less about us and more about Him and what He's doing in our life.
You've mentioned story work a few times. And for people listening who don't know what that means, what does it mean to do or do your story work?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I work with leader types. So, being a leader is, if you've got a following, you're a mom, you're a leader, okay? But the typical person is somebody like you who's founded an organization and is doing different pieces. And so I work with a lot of people who are accomplished and maybe look really impressive on the outside and are impressive, by the way. but have never, ever had anybody ask them about their story, their timeline. And so every single person I sit with in my executive coaching and in my practice, my counseling practice, and in Courageous Girls, which we'll talk about later, is to walk through your story. What happened when you were little? What's the story about when you were born? Do you know about it? Does your family even talk about it? Were you the oldest child, the middle child? Did mom and dad have a miscarriage before? Were they grieving? Did mom have postpartum? That sets the tone. You know, maybe your parents had you outside of wedlock. All those dynamics are laying a foundation for some beliefs and some systems that were set up in your family, all the way to like, what's your earliest memory? I remember Christmas. I remember going to grandma's house. And we dig into why. You know, what about that memory? I'm going through, and so if you're 65 years old, that's a long storyline, but we take our time to go bit by bit. And I always say, don't dismiss a story just because it seems like it doesn't have any significance. And I'll give you an example, Willow. In my story timeline, I was a kindergartner, and I almost didn't put this on my story timeline because I thought it's kind of dumb. But I was a kindergartner, and it was my first time I got my name on the board. And this girl, my friend at the time, asked me to go in. She said, go get a blue marker. And I'm like, we're not allowed to go get a blue marker. I'm not allowed to go inside. It's recess. And she said, go get me a blue marker. So I go in, get her a blue marker. I knew it was wrong. I didn't want to go in. But why did I do it? Because my friend asked me. And I get in, I get my name on the board, and a slow little seeping in of shame comes in, and a message that started then and continued throughout my life is, I don't have a voice. What I need and want doesn't matter. And see, you should always do the right thing or you're going to get in trouble. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, those were kind of these patterns that built out in my story. None of those are biblical or places that the Lord wants me to live from. So silly little example that I was like, what's the point of putting that on? But I remember that clear as day. And so it's important to my story. So doing story work is really, have I gone through with each little piece of my story and not minimizing it, not over dramatizing it, but allowing the Holy Spirit and another person to empathize and to mine the gold of what life has taught me about who God is, about who I am, and about actually what I'm most passionate about. Because most of our stories tell us what our calling and what God wants us to do, for He comforts us so that we will comfort others. So a lot of times when we do our story work, we find something on the other side of it that we are all driven towards in our, I'm imagining Kalai came out of your story and you're doing some of your story work.
It sure did. For people who have never done this before, is this something that they can do themselves? Is this something they need to do with a therapist? Is there a book? What's your advice for someone who's like, I've never done story work?
Yeah. I don't think it has to be done with a therapist unless you know that you have a lot of either memories you don't remember. That would be maybe a sign of some sort of trauma in your story. And in a way, it's called dissociation, where we have huge pockets of blank. And it's God's way of helping us get through hard, where we don't feel safe. So I would say if that's your story, then probably a counselor is going to be really, and I would say a trauma-informed Christian counselor would be really helpful for that. But you can do this with a friend. You can do this with a mentor. We do this in all of our coaching. It really is the invitation. And if you're going to do it with a friend, you might do it with each other. And to be able to tell your story at a slower pace, let somebody listen, ask curious questions, and help you mine the gold. So it can take some time. You're not going to do it in one quick coffee, you know, date. But if you're nervous about where to go, or you don't know if you have any safe people in your life who will really listen well to you, then Cats Where Counselors are a safe place to start.
One of our favorite things around here at Collide is hosting conferences just for you. These one-night events gather together women of all ages, stages, and faith backgrounds for an incredible night of inspiration and encouragement. Attending a Collide conference is a unique experience that women walk away from feeling refreshed, energized, hopeful, and changed. So check out the link in the show notes for more information on our upcoming events and grab your ticket today to join us for an impactful night.
And help you mine the gold. So it can take some time. You're not going to do it in one quick coffee date. But if you're nervous about where to go, or you don't know if you have any safe people in your life who will really listen well to you, then Cats Where Counselors are a safe place to start.
I think it's fascinating. I remember even realizing when I was about 21 years old, this Christian woman let me rent her basement apartment, and I had nothing to do with Christianity. My life was completely broken. I was a mess. And this woman invited me up for coffee every day. She invited me to go run errands with her. She invited me to dinner with her family. And she began to ask me my story. And it was the first time where I realized I had one. Mm-hmm. And she began to ask me questions and speak Jesus into my story. And it was life-changing for me. And then I ended up going to a Christian counselor who did much of the same. It's funny, though. So I think I've done a lot of story work since then, decades of it, but it still is necessary. I mean, I'm going through a process right now of having to say goodbye to my dad, who's passing away, and he's near the end of his life. And he and I didn't like see him much of my childhood. And so I'm finding myself again, after all these years of story work, in therapy, and the therapist is asking me questions about my story that are drawing up old memories that I haven't worked through, old feelings and lies and wounds in regards to my dad that I've never worked out, that need to be worked out. And so I just say that because I know there's people listening who might be like, oh, this sounds scary, or it sounds very vague, or what does it even mean? But I can testify it's so powerful to have someone sit with you and invite you to invite story out of you. It's in there. And sometimes it's dormant and it's hurting and you don't even know it.
You don't even know it, but it's leaking out in weird ways, right? Like we might look at the weed. I always say we usually go to counseling because we don't like the weed in our life. I'm depressed. I'm anxious. I'm yelling all the time. I don't like my life. Those are the weeds. But the story where it gets to the roots, and it looks ugly for a while. Like if you dig up a garden, it just looks really gross. And we're like, is anything good going to grow from this? So it is scary. But I'll tell you this, I've been doing trauma work for almost 25 years now. Not because I wanted to, but just that's what the Lord showed me in my own story, as well as the many, many people that would come in for something up here. We'd start the story work and realize they had never told anybody about their childhood sexual abuse, or again, the significant impact of what their parents going through the divorce and the messiness, because they were church leaders and they didn't know who to tell because of the image. So we discover more about ourselves when we start to open up. But the research is clear that it's not always what we go through that impacts us the most, it's actually what happens after what we went through that heals us.
Mm.
And the key is being able to tell someone in all authenticity the story, and to grieve, and to have a compassionate, empathetic human being. And I think God designed us that way. I can geek out on the neuroscience of it, but when I look at creation and God make how he made us and what his call is on the church to be Christ-like to one another, to bear one another's burdens, to listen, to be gentle and when we're rebuking one another. And the reason is because there's something underneath why we're probably doing what we're doing. Instead of calling it sin, the Bible calls it sin, but I would call it probably a maladaptive coping strategy. Like, I'm just trying to get my need met in a really unhealthy way. And God says, I want to help you. And so this is part of his healthy way, is bringing all of your story. And I think I only wanted to bring parts of my story. I only wanted to tell parts of my story. And I think that's a response that most women some of us can get caught, I'll say this to Willow, to a different part of those listening, can get caught in making our identity our story, or our story is our identity. So I'm divorced, or I'm a sexual abuse survivor, and making it, and we're now siloing ourselves and recognizing that everybody has pain and everybody has a story. And so you're not as alone as you think and feel. I think it's the enemy's turf. He really works hard to isolate us, especially as women, and to compare ourselves. But I've spent time with thousands of women, and sometimes I still am surprised. I'm like, I would have never guessed that was your story. Never.
Mm-hmm.
In a million years. And so compassion for ourselves and compassion for others. And I love that woman took time to go a little deeper. I'm imagining how that would have been really vulnerable. Like, why is she so curious? And why is she asking me these questions? But that was probably the beginning of you realizing I probably need to do some work here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm curious, in the work that you're doing with people and you're inviting them into this story work, how are you seeing it change their lives in ways that are incredible, that just surprise you? What are you seeing?
Oh, I feel like the joy of what I get to do is sitting on the front seats of watching God transform not only the person in front of me, but all of relationships. So their relationship with their kids, their spouse, their organizations, their communities, their neighbors. I always see it like it's a systems thinking from marriage and family therapy, but it's like seeing it like a wheel, and we're just a spoke in that wheel. And when we start to go a different direction in being more vulnerable, more honest, more grace filled, more gentler with ourselves and with others, we can actually be more honest actually about what we need, our boundaries. That starts to shift a whole new set of people that are around us. So when we decide to do our work, we're like, oh, I wish I could help that person and that person and that person. And I go, well, God kind of asked you to start with you. So I hate to quote Michael Jackson, but if you want to change the world, you know, you start with you. But it's that idea that honestly, if we want something to shift in our world, then we got to let's start with our story. And so I have seen incredible organizations, incredible passions, people letting go of false pretenses, marriages saved, marriages, abusive marriages finally ending in a way that's redemptive. And those are hard, but in redemption, that's where God is doing a work different than we sometimes want as human beings. But I get to witness the little changes, because I remember where you were, and we're celebrating where you are. And to your point, Willow, it's never ending. I hear this lie often, like, well, I did all my work. Why am I still here? Why am I still struggling? Or why? I go, because part of maturing is learning that this is a lifelong process. And we don't get to really fully be whole until we get to heaven and get to be seen fully. But in this life, we can have glimpses of the best of ourselves and glimpses of what God's kingdom looks like here, but it's not going to be whole. So that's the bummer part. I don't like saying that, but it's kind of a truth that sets a lot of us free from always trying to strive to be like, okay, if I just do this work, then I will finally ... whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there are areas and spaces in our lives that can experience healing, but then we can turn around and walk around a corner and run into have a collision with another broken person that hurts us. And then there's more story work to unpack. Yeah. And so it is a lifelong journey. You've mentioned identity a few times in this interview and the importance of identifying as a child of God, not identifying by your story. You're doing a ton of work. You lead a ministry called Courageous Girls, where you're equipping moms and daughters. You wrote a book, Courageous, Being Daughters Rooted in Grace. I'm curious, in this work you're doing with mothers and daughters, how you're seeing that it's almost like the work you're wanting to do with daughters is the work you wish had happened for the moms who are now wanting to do that work for their kids. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, how are you seeing, like, man, when I'm working with moms and I'm giving them tools on how to invest in their daughters, you wish those moms had it when they were kids?
Yeah. So here's how I believe God works. I mean, he's not very linear. And again, that systems thinking. So Courageous Girls came out of both being a mom, girl mom, and then the years spending time in my counseling office going, there's got to be a way for us to multiply this healing work in a way where it meets moms. Most moms won't go to counseling until they're kind of forced to. Again, they see the weeds. So I wanted prevention. So my thought, Courageous Girls is a small group of moms, 4, 5, 6 moms who decide to walk with their daughters at the similar ages, and they form their own little group. And from second grade all the way to high school, they're going to meet once a month. And I provided the conversation, the biblical and the clinical, where their daughter is at developmentally and what she needs to be talking about. And I'm inviting moms to do some of their own story work to show. Mm-hmm. And so it's powerful because we're building a community of moms practicing and getting to heal some of the places and spaces maybe their mom didn't know to do with them. Or, you know, we get to the sex talks, or we get to, all kinds of topics along the way. We hit everything under the sun, from bullying to eating disorders. I mean, we don't overtly talk about it in that way, but there's a prevention work that we're doing. So moms are working on their own stories along the way. That's what parenting is. I mean, God's using everything to heal us and to grow us if we're open to it. And I really wanted to pop through that Christian paradigm that, like, we're supposed to have arrived and then walk with someone else. And that's just not possible as parents. And everybody's story is different. So in a small community of women, we learn from each other. And I wanted, particularly for my group, I wanted my girls to see other women outside of who I am and them to learn, like, look at all the variety of ways that God makes women in all of our different stories. So one of my favorite, my girls are now sophomore and senior. So we finished my oldest's Courageous Girls group. We met for 9 years. And my youngest is finishing up her last years. But we went around and we shared our testimony. So we shared our stories and we gave the girls a chance to hear all the moms' stories. We share about our journeys with our periods. We share our journeys with how did we fall in love and figure out. And if you're divorced, like, what's that part been a part of your story? We've talked a lot about even our spiritual journeys. We're honest about the comparison game and our own confidence and what happened when we had acne. So it's this beautiful community of older moms and our daughters And the guided, the courageous girls model is that you would be walking with your daughter and the with the women in your community. So it's not like we pair people up with groups. We actually, but we give you all the curriculum and we give you a vehicle to help you grow while you're helping your daughter grow. And the end being courageous to be who God called her to be, regardless of her story. To be able to be resilient and have tools to be able to recognize her voice and that her, she has choice and how big her God is. And so we do that in all of, like, you know, how to deal with mean girls on the playground and all the way up to social media and TikTok. And so it's really a powerful process that actually came out of my own journey with my daughters. And now it's become a global movement, and we've got courageous girls groups in 13 countries and in all over the U.S. And it's been a grassroots movement that moms are like, I want to walk with my daughter, and I'm open to growing myself.
I love it so much because you're modeling growth. I think so often as parents, we think we have to kind of be this, like, I'm the guru, I've arrived, I know everything, and I'm going to tell you what you need to know. And there's been so much work around this. Even recently, I had a podcast guest, Stephen Argue. I don't know if you know him, but he's written a ton of books on, like, for youth groups and parents. And he talked about this, and it's such a good resource. And it's about shifting your mindset. And I think the idea that if I model growth, if I model surrender, if I model humility, if I model the need for therapy or healing or Jesus to come in and change my life, then I'll be inviting my kid to the same thing, which is a lifelong, like, healthy relationship with Jesus where we're needing him for everything and he's showing up. So I love that so much. I know there's people listening who want to hear more from you. In fact, I hope we can have you on one day and talk more about moms and daughters. But for now, how can women follow along with the work you're doing, get a copy of your book, hear more about Courageous Girls?
Yeah, well, the book Courageous, Being Daughters Rooted in Grace, is anywhere books are sold in all the different formats. So whatever preference you have, you can go to Terra, T-E-R-R-A is my first name, and Mattson, M-A-T-T-S-O-N.com. And you'll see Courageous Girls there. You'll also see Living Wholehearted, where our podcast, I'm actually going to be doing a mom-daughter podcast. It might be out by the time this airs, but it'll be called the Courageous Girls Podcast, where we're specifically talking about the issues that women need, but in light of being moms of daughters and that next generation. And even if you don't have a daughter, but are discipling or coming alongside other women, younger women, this book is for you too. It's really helping us with our own journey. Because most of us learn from other women by watching them and what they do and what they don't do, not always, again, what they're teaching us per se. And so it's really about us becoming and trusting that we are who God said we are, and we're unique, but we have a lot of similarities as women. And I want to just continuing giving that voice to the next generation of girls. I think we can do a lot of prevention of some of the maladaptive coping strategies. If we just speak life into, it's okay to be a human. It's okay to feel. It's okay to have bad days. It's okay to be hormonal. Like, God's the one who created all this.
I love it. Thank you so much for hopping on today, Terra. Thank you for what you're doing in the world and in lives.
Thank you, Willow, for having me. It's such a gift.
Hey, friend, I hope that somehow, some way, the Lord met you today in the way that you needed it most. I hope that this episode that you just heard with Terra brought you some hope and some encouragement and some ideas, and maybe even God gave you some challenges in there. So if you need more resources so that you can grow and you can heal as a mom, so that you can help your daughter grow and heal and point her towards Jesus, we have so much for you on our website. So make sure you hop over there at weeklie.net. If you haven't signed up to be a newsletter subscriber, you're going to want to do that, because you will be the first to know all the new content we're creating, the new events we're having, and the resources that we have for you. So check that out as well. I hope that you keep colliding, and we'll catch you next week.